You stated that intersex was a result of the fall, and certainly I agree with you there. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you'd agree with me if I said that mental illness was also a result of the fall. And I would also assert that mental illness can cause people to sin. When we look at mass shooters that aren't religiously motivated, almost all of them have some kind of mental disorder. Someone who is bulimic or anorexic, certainly that causes them to be vain and to be absorbed with their self-image. So if someone is born with the mental disorder of gender dysphoria, is it possible that could cause them to sin without God causing them to sin? You stated that this comes from the fall. So if these types of mental disorders come from the fall, could the mental disorder and not God be what's causing these gender dysphoric people to sin?
Right. So obviously a complex question. I think gender dysphoria is caused by the sin of culture, wherever you want to lay it, at the feet of the parents, at the feet of the culture that's degraded. I think children reflect an image, the pain and suffering that they have in their families. If parents are going through divorce, you can't explain to a child that you're not the cause of the divorce. You can't explain that to them. They don't understand, and they think they're the cause. If they're sexually abused, it messes with all kinds of different levels of how they feel and how they react. And so, yes, that is something that's being put on them by culture. I don't believe it's something that's being done to them by God. And so, at what point is somebody responsible? You know, to a certain degree, as adults, that happens to us. If somebody comes to you and entices you into an affair, they've enticed you through sin, but you give in. I don't know what that point is where a child reaches the age of accountability and they persist in what they're doing. That's up to God. But I don't believe I guess the bottom line from the way I understand your question, I don't think God is doing this. I think we live in a fallen world with wicked and evil people, and we all know there's predators all over the place. People that take advantage of young boys and young girls, and it's a terrible, terrible thing. And then those young people have to deal with the consequences of abuse. And it does affect the way they look at sex and they think about sex. And that's true with all of us. All of us, to some degree, are affected by what has happened to us and what we've done in our life. The experience, if you had early experiences as a teenager in sex, in my own family, we have experience with this. The earlier you start, the more likely you are to have serious consequences later because the barriers have fallen. And so my answer to that is, it's people. And it's not God. But God does eventually judge sin. And at some point, you're accountable for your sin. And that's up to Him and His eternal wisdom, certainly not mine.
I want to ask a quick question, then I'll send it back to Alan Bonifay. Brother, I noticed a few times that you weren't quite sure what to call someone, him or her, he or she. I agree with what you said at the end, that in sharing the gospel in this culture, where I think you're right that aberrant culture has produced this problem, but regardless of where it came from, it's here. This is a reality. So we're talking to someone. How do we show respect and love in sharing the gospel while at the same time not compromising what the Bible teaches? Would it be a compromise to address a person as a female if they are in fact a male when you're trying to teach them the gospel? Or would that be necessary if that's their understanding in order to share them the truth in love?
That's a very difficult question, and I asked my wife this very question as I was working on this study, and I will tell you her answer because I thought it was a pretty good answer. She said, "We, to some degree, you're working with somebody who's living out of wedlock, with an individual. They're not married. And it isn't the first thing you bring up. You know, when they come into the workplace, I'm introduced to somebody new, and I know they're living out of wedlock. I don't say, "You're a fornicator. What are you doing?" You know, I don't do that. Instead, I approach that person gently and try to win their confidence and show love to them in any way I can, and then hope down the line to be able to interact positively with them and convince them. I think the same, and obviously, got preachers all over the place here and elders that are wise, and I just think we need to be gentle and loving. And right now it's a very polarized society, and if you misgender somebody, it's seen as violent. I put this up just to show it's seen as violence. And so I think to some people, you're going to immediately turn them off if you don't use their preferred pronouns or if you don't refer to them with the appropriate, what they want to be called as far as their gender. So that's my answer. I think you have to use judgment, but I would err on the side of trying to win them over so that you have a chance to talk with them about Christ.
I appreciate that. I'd love to hear what some of the other more experienced preachers have to say about it as well. It reminds me of a time when Jimmy Cating and I were doing some work in Wichita Falls, and we were delivering a Bible study to a woman. She was bedfast, but her sister was over to visit, and her sister was a lesbian, and it was evident she and her partner were there. And when we were in the room, she asked Jimmy and I, "Would you study the Bible with us?" I think she expected us to say no. We said, "Yes, we would." And she said, "Well, what would you study with us?" And Jimmy said, "The gospel." And that's right. That's what we would study. Alan Bond.
I thought that was masterful, Bart. I really appreciate it. And I think it was an excellent introduction to a very difficult topic, introduction to most of us here. It was one, as Clint said earlier, makes us uncomfortable, sometimes disgusted. And I think we need to be careful about those emotions, and I appreciated what you said. I think it's a mistake for people to make statements from the pulpit that ridicule or do not take seriously these problems. I haven't heard that in this particular topic, but what is now a fairly old saw about homosexuality, God didn't make them Adam and Steve, that kind of thing is not going to win anybody. And our object is to preach the gospel so that people will accept it. Now, so I appreciated that. I thought it was an excellent example. And also, I think that in these kinds of issues, it points up again that we need to be very, very careful and slow, much slower than we often are, about putting people in various leadership functions of the church, even the most minor ones, because we tend to conflate leadership and an issue like this all into one thing, and that's a mistake here. An intersex person, for example, I just learned this, that I was being politically incorrect last night. My son told me that, using the word hermaphrodite. But anyway, an intersex person, this in some ways is a much more difficult issue when you're assigning responsibility or blame. And we need to be very careful about that, I think. It's a different issue than the dysmorphia, is that what you said? The psychological.
Oh, dysphoria. Dysphoria.
It's a different kind of issue. This is something that has happened to people through the fall, through corruption of the genetic system. It's not their fault. The other one may not be clearly their fault either, but it's more likely to be by cultures. And so I think we need to be careful about assigning blame here. And but I do think, and I appreciated also what you said here, there needs to be a bright line of distinction between what the Bible teaches and what culture is saying. And we need to teach our people that regularly, and not to ride a hobby, but people need to be instructed regularly about this. This is a major issue of our time. Now, the example you gave about you're studying with people and they, or you know them and you have opportunity to talk to them and they're living together but they're not married. So eventually you get a study with these people. Now, I do think you need to talk to them, and I'm sure you probably do too. You need to talk to them about this situation before you baptize them. Now, it may not be the first thing you talk to them about, but you can't baptize them and let them live on in that condition. It might not be that easy with some of these intersex or psychological issues related to intersex. We may not find out that that's the situation. The person may not find out, as you mentioned, but we might not find out for a long time. And so we need to be very careful about how we proceed in these areas. I appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you, Al. I agree.
All right. To Shahe, and then we'll go back.
Go ahead, Wes. Mike's right there.
That was extremely interesting. Very thought-provoking. One quick comment to address Clint's question. I'm reminded of Paul in 1 Corinthians 9 saying, to the weak I became as the weak, to the Jew I became as a Jew. To win people over, he worked with them. And it might not be so difficult if you're trying to convert someone to call them she if they want to be called she. I'm not sure. And I don't know if that scripture supports that or not. But if the goal is to win people over, then it goes in line with what my dad was saying too, that we don't want to turn people away. We want to be accepting. I'm going to use that as well. I want to piggyback on what Matt brought up. Your background is in medicine, and so you listed a lot of congenital physical disorders, and said you could go for an hour. I could maybe do the same with psychological disorders. My background is in psychology. And if you assert, as you did, and actually as you did as well, Matt, don't start a not good up here, but if you assert that culture is to blame for gender dysphoria, then do you also assert that culture is to blame for autism, for ADHD, for anxiety, depression, and so on, that have been shown, there's tons of evidence that different things can affect the pregnant mother to reduce mental illness in the child, in the womb. And so, if you're going to say culture causes sexual dysphoria, you have to also make that jump, in my opinion, to say culture is causing these other things that are manifested in the womb. And I don't, the dots are not connecting for me with any sort of scriptural background. You said it's my opinion that it's culture. Dad, you said that for intersex, it's not cultural, but for dysphoria, it is cultural. And I don't know, I'm not as convinced in that leap as it seems that you guys are. So I'm just curious what you think about that.
Well, and this is the nature versus nurture debate, I agree. You know, it is a difficult area, and my feeling about it, as I said, it's just my opinion, is that sexual identity and sexual desire is a little different for me than, say, from autism or some of the other conditions. And again, we don't know the cause of autism yet, right? It's still in debate. So again, it's just my opinion, but I felt this way since the 90s. The former preacher that was here in the 90s, and I had a discussion, it was about 94, 95, and he was saying he thought homosexuality was genetic. And I said, no, it's not. And it's been 20-some years since then, and they still haven't found a genetic link for, and they have tried very hard. For me, it just doesn't fit in with God designing these genders, these perfect genders, and then throwing, you know, a a wrench into some people's lives. It just seems to me to be something, when you desire somebody or you have a vast pain and sorrow about your gender orientation, and you have gender dysphoria, to me that is going above and beyond mental disorder, depression, or those sort of things. It's just, for me, it's a different level of seriousness. And I understand that you disagree, and I may be proven wrong in the next few years, and if that's the case, I'll own up to it. But I think it's culture. And the reason I think that is these children with gender dysphoria also have bulimia and anorexia nervosa and other mental illnesses, and parents don't understand the pain they put their kids through. You know, we don't talk about it a lot, but when you're a dad and you're not accepting of your son, and you don't say good job, and you don't walk that line between discipline and love, or maybe you have the older son and you ignore the second or the third, that's a hammer blow, and they don't know what to do with that. Dad doesn't love me. Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath, Ephesians 6:4. Dads have to focus on their children and let them know that their love for who they are, expect from them that they walk correctly. But there's so many parents that mess that up, and divorce is one of the biggest. When parents go their separate ways, the kids don't understand that. And I think a lot of this gender dysphoria is because the kids are trying to figure out why dad and mom, they don't love me. That's just my opinion.
Okay, let's go up here to Shai. We've got a new list. Oh, no.
Brother, I enjoyed it very much. I'm curious about the phrase gender identity, which seems to have entered into colloquial use very recently. Why is that expression the one that's used? Why those who suffer from gender dysphoria say, I identify with another gender, as opposed to just saying, I am another gender or something like that? What is packaged into that expression?
The two psychologists that really started that was the Robert Stoller fellow that I mentioned at the beginning, and then this individual, his name is John Money, and probably a lot of you are aware of who Dr. John Money was, and he was very vocal about gender role and gender identity, and he made some tragic, terrible mistakes in the 60s would cause the suicide of one of his patients. But he and Dr. Stoller, Dr. Money and Dr. Stoller, really are the individuals that started this idea of a gender identity, and it just caught on. It's like a lot of things in culture. Once it becomes a term that people like, then it just spreads like wildfire. Like the word trigger, we all say now, don't trigger me. Who knows who said that? But it caught on like wildfire and has spread. So that's the best answer I can give. These two gentlemen, Dr. Stoller and Dr. Money, are responsible.
Okay, Logan.
You said that gender dysphoria was reversible, which I wholeheartedly agree with. So my question then would be, let's say we have somebody that has experienced gender dysphoria in the church. They're a Christian. Do you think that it would be fully reversible in the sense that they would not experience temptation to switch their gender? Or do you think that they might have a big issue with fully getting rid of their temptation?
Well, I'll preface that with my comments by saying, I'm completely unprepared I'm not a psychologist. As Dr. Bonifay is, and I've never treated anyone, so it's not my area of expertise. But I think that if you deal with someone and show them love, and you'd have to interact with the parents as well, and do the best you can to wipe away some of the pain. Pain typically though it echoes in life, and we may get past 90% or 95% of the pain and sorrow we have over some event, but a lot of times there's always something in the background. So my guess is that while healing is possible, it's like with us on a lot of issues, it's not 100%. Clint.
Let me get one in real quick, then we'll go back to Taylor. That'll be maybe the last one, I think so. Okay. Is there a difference in modern lingo between transgender and transvestite?
Yes. Transvestite is no longer. I went to some LGBT sources to find out if they still use the term, and most, maybe a very small crowd, but most of them find it offensive because it was a term that was used by psychologists and psychiatrists to say you're perverted. It's a sexual perversion, and so it's pretty much not used anymore.
And that's interesting. Maybe you can comment on this very quickly, but I recognize there are people who are mentally ill, and they gun down hosts of people, and they do that as a because they had a mental break. There are other people who kill people just because they're wicked. It's not because they're mentally ill, they're just wicked people. Cross-dressing is a sin. And so I think when we're talking about whether it's nurture or nature and whether it may have a background in mental illness that's even developed before birth, we do have to recognize God does not condemn as sinful behaviors that only come about in people who are mentally ill and aren't accountable for their action anyway. That seems to me to be the case. A mentally ill person, is he even accountable? A person who's completely deranged and doesn't realize what he's doing? But clearly God holds some cross-dressers and some catamites and effeminate men, as 1 Corinthians 6, 9 says, accountable. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, Will.
I didn't. I thought about this, though, and I wondered, does it have to be a public display of cross-dressing to be sinful? You know, they say there's a lot of men wearing women's underwear.
Well,
I don't know. I don't personally, but they say that, you know, they say that a pretty good percentage of men are walking around doing that. So I don't have an answer to that, but it occurred to me, would that be sinful if nobody knows, and you're the only one? I don't know. I don't know the answer.
All right, well, let's we do have two. Let's do Taylor, and let's be succinct here because we've got two more.
Yeah, I appreciate your presentation, Bart. Two quick questions for you on transgenderism. We talked about this a little bit before, but if it hasn't happened yet, it will before too long. A transgendered person will obey the gospel, become a member of the church. How should that person then proceed? Should they stick with the gender they are currently, or do they have an obligation to try to revert as best they can to their biological gender?
I think that would be the case, yes, that they would need to respect God's law concerning, you know, the gender they were born into. And I just think that would really come down to them stopping hormonal therapy and then confessing the sin of changing genders, and then just publicly saying, I'm now my birth gender. I don't think they'd have to have surgery to correct any issues that they'd had, because obviously surgery is expensive and dangerous. But I just think repenting of the fact that they had pursued that, making a public announcement of it, and then walking the path of the gender God made them is probably.
Okay, and so how does that square with the idea of Paul puts forward in 1 Corinthians of remaining as you are, circumcised or uncircumcised, for instance?
Yeah, well, I don't think Paul's saying that you remain in sin. Certainly, if we all agree that if you're in a marriage situation that is sinful, then you can't remain in that situation if you become a Christian. And I think this is in that same category. You have to repent and change.
Okay, let's go to Roger Boone and Jerry Dickinson. We'll be very, very quick because we're finishing up.
Trying to be very quick without a big lead-in. If let's say homosexuality is environmental and all the rest, then in the environment of the United States right now, would we be expecting a large increase in the numbers of those people? Have we seen that? And if we didn't see that, what would that tell us?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think as the culture gets more and more, you know, crazy, we're going to see more and more behavior like this. This is a Disney star on a new Disney show, Rowan Blanchard, and she tweeted out recently that she identifies as queer. It's popular. It's the thing to do, and people are doing it, and I think it's going to advance dramatically in our, and that's why we're talking about it, because it's going to change. The kids here are going to see a completely different world, because, you know, evil communications corrupt good habits, and people are going to see this as normal, and this is how people are going to begin behaving.
And that's what I want to say real quickly. I'm not worried about all the adults in this building, but I am worried about these children. I'm worried about my six grandchildren. William Barton, and by the way, whether it's caused by genetics or caused, whatever the cause is, the Bible says it's sin. And this is nothing new. Now, these terms you're giving us are new. Dysphoria and all this, most of us, I have never heard before. But the sin is not new. William Barclay, in his commentary on Romans, says 12 of the first 13 emperors of the Roman Empire were practicing homosexuals. And they had boys that they kept. And these boys were kept as boys. So this is nothing new. The Bible says it's sin. Paul said, such were some of you. So this is nothing new. It's a sin. And we can debate the cause, but it's a sin. And our children need to understand that. And parents, there are predators. We know that. And we better protect our... You know, I'll say this lastly. Dr. Dobson, the quote-unquote Christian psychologist, says you should never let your boys stay overnight with people. Even, and I'm going to tell you from experience, I know even in the church, talk about uncomfortable, there are predators. And many of our children have experienced this. It is an old sin, and I'm worried about our children in this culture that we're in.